That was it. Did you know her? Claire shook her head. No, she murmured. This was so hard. How could she describe to him something that would be almost impossible to believe? She sighed and kneaded her hands, which ached. It was mid-morning. Often her joints ached in the morning. She cleared her throat. Her voice, she knew, was an old person's voice now. Too soft sometimes, too tentative. But she took a deep breath and tried to speak firmly, to make him listen, to make him understand the incomprehensible. My ceremony was 3 years before yours.
Your ceremony?
The ceremony of 12.
But,
she held up her hand. Shh, just listen.
Jonas, looking confused, fell silent.
I received my assignment when I turned 12. I was assigned birth mother.
She paused.
That was a disappointment, of course, but I had not been a good student.
She could see that he was still puzzling over her words. There was nothing to do but go on.
After a while, when I was deemed ready, I moved into the birthing unit. Around them, the pace of the village continued. Some women were gossiping as they weeded in the community garden. Nearby, small children played with some puppies. From Boys' Lodge, the usual group emerged and ran down the path, calling laughing insults to one another. Gabe was not among them. He had gone to his place by the river much earlier and was alone there, fitting the last parts of his odd little boat into place. All of this fell away from their awareness as Jonas and Claire sat together. She talked. He listened attentively. Now and then he interrupted her softly to ask a question. The pills. When did she stop taking the pills?
I did too. I just threw them away, he told her. Did you feel the change?
I felt different from the others, but I was already different in so many ways. He nodded. She could tell that he was slowly accepting the story she was telling him. But she saw him look carefully at her thin gray hair, her stooped shoulders and gnarled hands, and knew that he could not comprehend yet how she had become what she now was. She told him of her work in the fish hatchery, after her discharge from the birthing center, of her search for Gabe, and her visits to him. She described how the infant had begun to say her name, how he laughed at the funny face she made and tried to imitate it. Claire thrust her tongue into her cheek and made the face for Jonas. He looked startled.
I remember it, he told her.
When he and I were together, you know he stayed in my dwelling at night.
I know.
Sometimes he made that funny face for me, but of course I didn't know. He paused, still trying to comprehend. She continued her story. The midday bell rang. Villagers began to gather for lunch. Jonas and Claire ignored it.
Will Kira be wondering where you are?
He shook his head. No, she was taking the children on a picnic with some friends. Please go on, unless you're hungry. Would you like to stop for lunch?
Claire said no.
I don't have much of an appetite anymore.
You're too thin.
I eat very little. Herbalist says it's not unusual for someone my age. It's part of the natural process.
Your age? Jonas asked.
But you were 3 years older than I was. What happened?
We'll get to that. Then you'll understand. She went on with the telling. It would take a long time. She felt that in order to understand, he must know every detail. The day cleared, and a pale sun dried the moisture. By late afternoon, the shadows had lengthened, and they were sitting in deep shade. The air had turned cool. Jonas had placed his jacket across Claire's shoulders. She was very tired by now, but felt oddly invigorated by relating the story to someone at last. It had been her secret, her private burden for years. She told it slowly, and he didn't hurry her. Now and then she had paused to rest. He had brought her water and a biscuit. The entire day had belonged to them and to her story. She described the torturous climb up the cliff at length, feeling the need to relive it inch by inch, as Einar had told her he had, remembering each handhold, each precipice and narrow ledge, Talking slowly, she felt the muscles in her arms and legs respond to the memory. Jonas noticed it, how she shifted her body as in her mind she made the climb again. He winced when she told of the attack by the bird. She showed him the scar on her neck. Finally, as exhausted almost by the telling as she had been when she reached the top of the cliff that long ago dawn, she described the terrible trade she had made. Jonas leaned forward, his elbows on his knees, and put his face into his hands.
"Trade master," he said. "I thought he was gone. We banished him from the village a long time ago. I was leader then."
"Who is he?" Claire asked. He didn't respond. He stayed silent, looking now into a distant place, a place that Claire couldn't see.
"I should have known," he said after a moment. "I felt something out there, something related to Gabe, but I didn't realize what it was. I think I was feeling your presence," he mused, "and that was puzzling but benign. But there is something else, something malignant. It must be him."
"Who is he?" Claire asked again.
"He is evil. I don't know how else to describe it. He is evil. And like all evil, he has enormous power. He tempts, he taunts, and he takes."
"Gabe has your same eyes," Claire said suddenly. "You and Gabe have the same pale eyes."
"My eyes," he said, answering her. "They see beyond the places most people can see. I'm told it's my gift, that there are others with different gifts. And yes, Gabe has the same eyes. Sometimes I wonder."
From the top of a pine tree near the river, a large bird suddenly lifted itself and swooped past them in the late golden light.
"Were you scared of birds at first?" Claire asked him suddenly.
"What?"
"When you ran away from the community, when you first saw birds, were you scared?"
Jonas nodded.
"Just at first, and other things, too. I remember the first time I saw a fox. Gabe was so little, he wasn't afraid of anything. It was all new and exciting to him."
Claire realized suddenly that he was talking to her in a different way. He had known her since she had arrived in the community, and he had always spoken to her in a kindly fashion. He had been helpful and patient, a young man to an old woman. But they had never been more than acquaintances. Now they were reminiscing together, as old friends who had just reunited.
"I thought of taking him," she confessed. "But I didn't know how to hide him or where I could go. And then your father showed me that he wore a special bracelet on his ankle, so I realized that I'd be caught if I tried to take him."
"Yes, an electronic bracelet." Claire frowned.
"I don't remember what that means, what it was."
"There was so much in the community that isn't part of our lives anymore. But that's what our memories consist of. Small things," Jonas said. "My bicycle. I haven't seen a bicycle since then, except the one in the museum. That was my father's bike. I stole it. It had a seat for Gabe."
Claire nodded.
"Yes, in my memory, I can see him riding in it. He held a toy."
Jonas laughed. "His hippo."
"He called it Poe, didn't he? It's coming back now."
"Yes, Poe."
Now she could almost hear and see it, the dimpled hands clutching the stuffed toy, the high, happy voice.
"Did you take the hippo with you when you escaped?"
Jonas shook his head. "I couldn't. It all happened so fast. I discovered they were going to release... No, not release. They were going to kill Gabe. I took him and fled, and I had to take food. There was no room for anything else."
"I would have gone with you if I'd known. Things would be different now if I had."
She shifted on the bench and rubbed her sore hip.
"I wish..."
But then she fell silent. Jonas was quiet. He didn't reply.
"I was so frightened of birds," she said suddenly, "of their feathers and beaks. Then Einar brought me one in a cage as a pet. I named it Yellow Wing."
"Einar? He was the one who..."
Yes, the one who prepared me for the climb out.
Her eyes went to her feet, thick and bunioned in primitive sandals. She pulled them back beneath the bench to hide them. He knew she was remembering how limber she had been then, how balanced and sure.
I loved Einar, she told him.
Do you wish you had stayed? Jonas asked her after a moment.
No, she said firmly. But I wish it had not been evil that brought me here.
Jonas helped her up from the bench, his hand under her arm. They had been sitting together for a long time, and Claire was stiff. She stretched slowly and took a deep breath. Are you all right? He asked, looking at her with concern. She nodded.
I'll be all right in a minute. My heart's fluttery sometimes, and I'm just a little slow to get moving.
Jonas continued looking at her.
I remember you, he said after a moment.
We never spoke to each other, Claire pointed out.
They began to walk slowly. He was seeing her home.
No, but I saw you. My father mentioned you, the girl who came now and then to the nurturing center and played with Gabe. He pointed you out to me one time. I think you rode past on your bike, and he said, that's the one.
It seems so strange to realize who you are. He pointed you out to me. That's my son, he said. He told me your name. It brings it all back, those days in the community.
I don't think about it anymore. I've made a life here where it's so different.
So has Gabe.
Jonas nodded.
He doesn't remember the community.
It's just as well.
I'm not certain. It frustrates him not having a past or a family.
So, he's wondered.
More than wondered, Jonas told her. He has a passionate need to figure out his past. I try to tell him what he wants to know, but it's never been enough. That's why he's building the boat. I told him we had lived by a river, perhaps the same river. He's determined to find his way back.
They both fell silent.
Then we must...
Maybe together we...
They had both spoken at the same time, and they were both saying the same thing. We must try to tell all of this to Gabe. Together we can help him understand. But there was no time to discuss it. They were interrupted by the shouts of boys, excited, perhaps alarmed. The noise was coming from the riverside, the place where Gabe had been working for weeks on the little boat. Chapter 7 Gabe hadn't wanted an audience for the launch. He wasn't certain the boat was completely ready, and he didn't want to be humiliated if anything went wrong. His plan was to sneak away alone. Yesterday he had moved the boat closer to the water, shoving it across some underbrush. Now it was lying on a low, muddy section of the bank. The paddle was resting diagonally inside. The picture in his book, the book he had borrowed from Jonas, showed the lone man in the ocean, lying doomed in his small boat. His arms were taut and muscled, but useless. It was clear that the huge waves were going to be the ruin of him. He had no paddle, Gabe had thought, looking intently at the painting. Maybe he lost it, or maybe he forgot to bring one. There was no way the man could save himself in that overwhelming sea. He needed a paddle. For a foolish moment, Gabe focused intensely and tried to veer into the picture of the painted man, to know how it felt to be afloat, to be about to die in the sea, and to know it while safe himself, able to end the veer when he chose, just to feel the fear briefly and the movement of the churning waves. But it didn't work. The man was not real. He was the painter's idea of a man, simply daubs of paint, nothing more. A painted man who needed a paddle. Gabe was proud of the paddle he had made. He was proud of the entire boat, but he realized it was a rough, primitive construction. The paddle was different. He had felt very fortunate to have found a slender young cedar that broadened at its base just the right potential for his plan. Carefully, he had cut the tree down and then shaped the paddle from its trunk. It seemed to take forever, but he carried it back and forth to Boys Lodge and was able to work on it there in the evenings, carving carefully, smoothing, shaping. His friends, even those who ridiculed his boat, were impressed with the paddle, with its sweet cedary smell, its graceful curved edges, and the sheen of its wood now that he had rubbed it with oil. "Can I carve my name on it? Just small, but so you can remember me," Nathaniel had asked. Gabe had agreed, and watched while his friend carved his name meticulously. Then Simon asked, and Tariq and others. Even those boys who had made fun of his project now took pains to add their signature. Watching them, Gabe found that he could make tiny veers into each of the boys as they bent over the paddle, carving carefully. He could feel their feelings. "I don't think he'll make it," he felt Nathaniel worrying. "He might die in the river." "I hope he finds his mother," he felt from Tariq. "He wants it so badly." "He's something of a fool, but he's courageous, I'll say that for him. I wish I had his courage." Gabe was surprised to feel that from Simon, who had been scornful of the whole project. At the last, he had shyly asked Jonas to carve his name as well. He felt Jonas's fear for him, but Jonas gave no sign. His face was calm, and he smiled when he handed the paddle back with his name inscribed. He had left a rounded knob at one end for a handhold. The other end fanned out into a broad triangle. He had stood on the bank by the water and dipped it in, pulling it through to feel the river's resistance. It required strength. But Gabe was strong. In recent months he'd begun to fill out. His muscles were firm and his energy boundless. He had been delayed after lunch by some chores he had left undone. Grumpily, he folded his laundry, put it away, and straightened his room. Now, heading back to the river, he assessed the weather. The misty morning had cleared, and through the clouds, a bit of sun made a narrow glint of light. The river would be smooth, Gabe thought. Sometimes after a storm, it became turbulent and dangerous. He wasn't worried. His boat could manage, he was certain. But for this first test, he was glad of the calm weather. He would take it slow. He needed to learn how exactly to wield the paddle, how to steer. He flexed one arm, admired his own bicep, and wondered if Deirdre would ever notice. Then he blushed, embarrassed that he had even thought such a foolish thing. "Gabe! Hey, Gabe!" He recognized Tariq's voice, then Simon's, and Nathaniel's. They had spotted him on the path. Annoyed, Gabe stopped and waited. They had guessed what he was doing. His whole group from Boys Lodge caught up with him, just Simon and Tariq at first. Then they were joined by the others who came running. "You gonna do it, Gabe? Put it in the water? Can we watch?" "We'll be your rescuers," Tariq suggested. He had wanted to be alone for this. Too late now. Well, let them watch. When the time came, the real time, the time when he would leave for good, he would do it alone. Maybe at night. He'd leave a note at Boys Lodge. A separate note for Jonas, he thought, with a thank you. Jonas had done his best for Gabe. Deirdre? No, that would be foolish. No note for Deirdre. Let her wonder about him always. For now, though, no notes. This was just a practice. What was it they called it in that book about boats? A sea trial. That's what it would be. "Hey, Gabe!" Simon saw the coiled rope beside his little shed. Gabe had tied stacks of boards together in order to drag them into place. He planned to return the rope soon. "What?" "How about if you tie one end of this rope to the boat and we'll hold the other end when you push off? Then if you have any kind of trouble, we can haul you back in." Gabe scowled at Simon. "Like a baby with a toy boat in the pond?" "No, I meant..." "Forget it, Simon. Leave the rope where it is. I borrowed it from Jonas. He wants it back." "Anybody who wants to help... give me a hand pushing it into the water." Several of the boys came eagerly to the bank where the boat was wedged in the slick mud. "But listen, Gabe," Nathaniel sounded worried. "Maybe you should at least take the rope with you in the boat, because when you want to come ashore, you'll need to grab something. Maybe you could make a noose in the rope and throw it over a tree stump or a bush." "Yeah, he's right, Gabe," someone else said. Gabe stood beside his boat, furious. They were ruining everything. Crowding around, criticizing, predicting disaster. "Look there, where these two boards don't quite come together," a boy named Stefan said suddenly. "Won't water come in through that crack?" He pointed. Gabe glanced to where Stefan was pointing. He had meant to fill that wide crack with thick mud and let it dry and harden. "When the boards get wet," he said, "they'll expand and come together there." Stefan looked skeptical.
"But what if..."
"Look," Gabe said impatiently, "if you're going to be all worried about it, I'll stuff something in the gap. Hand me that rag." He gestured toward the piece of cloth he had used to oil the paddle. It was lying near the shed. Stefan tossed it to him, and Gabe ripped it into strips. Then he stuffed one wadded strip of cloth into the space between the boards. "There," he said. "Happy?" Stefan glanced nervously at the others standing on the bank. Simon shrugged. Nathaniel looked very worried. Tariq grinned.
"Sure," he said. "Happy."
"Happy to see you sink," muttered one boy, and several others laughed.
Gabe ignored them now. He was concentrating on moving the boat into the water from its muddy resting place. His hands were slippery on the rounded wood. He leaned his shoulder against it and pushed. Several of the boys were pushing as well, and with a sudden lurch, the bottom of the boat lifted from the mud and moved forward into the water. Gabe leapt in, tumbling onto his backside, and grabbed the paddle. The river water was very still here at the shallow edge. Gabe raised himself first to his knees, then he stood upright, holding the paddle against the wooden floor of the boat for balance. He hadn't anticipated that it would rock and tip the way it was, but he spread his bare feet for balance. He was still quite near the shore, and he forgot his anger and impatience in the triumph of the moment when he was finally standing upright without faltering. In a moment, he would kneel and begin to steer with the paddle. But for now, it seemed appropriate to stand tall, to raise one hand from the paddle and salute his friends who were watching apprehensively. They grinned. Then, to his surprise, the boat began to rotate. Now he was no longer facing the shore and his friends, he was looking out toward the center of the river and across to the trees on the opposite bank. Well, of course, he thought, realizing that he wasn't steering it yet. He knelt, balancing awkwardly. He raised the paddle and dipped it into the water. He had practiced this, pulling the water with the broadened end, and he knew how it felt, so the resistance didn't surprise him. Leaning forward, he pulled the paddle against the current, and the boat responded slightly, revolving a bit, so that again he saw the boys, but they were farther from him now. The river was drawing him outward, away from the bank. He had planned this. This was his time to practice controlling the boat, propelling and steering it. With the paddle, he moved it slightly toward the bank he had just left. But the river pulled him farther out again. "All right," he thought, "I need to steer faster." He took several long pulls with the paddle and brought himself again closer to shore. But he was moving with the current down the river, and a group of young alders were hiding the boys from him now. He realized it would be hard to get back to them. The current was pulling him away from where they stood. "Are you all right?" He recognized Nathaniel's voice. "Yes," he called back. "I'm just figuring out how the paddle works." The boat spun slightly and tilted. It was hard for him to regain his balance. He planted his knees and feet. He realized suddenly that they were wet, not from the damp mud of the riverbank, but from water that was streaming in through cracks between the boards. He tried to aim for shore, pulling through the water with his paddle, but the boat felt heavier now with water in it. He could hear the boys' voices, shouting, getting closer to him. He realized that his friends were running along the riverbank, following him as he moved, the boat twirling clumsily out of control. The water had risen and covered his lower legs. The paddle seemed more and more useless as a steering device. Finally, angrily, he plunged it straight downward through the water and felt it scrape the bottom. It slowed the boat. Through the bushes, the boys appeared, calling to him. "Here," Tariq shouted. "I brought the rope. If I throw it to you, we can pull you to shore." Gabe knew what he wanted to call back. He wanted to call, "Don't bother, I can paddle myself to shore." But it wasn't true. The paddle was stuck in the muddy bottom of the river, and it was at the moment precariously holding the boat still. But the swirling water was rising. "All right, throw it." At least he caught the rope on the first throw, so he wasn't additionally humiliated. He wrapped it around his wrist and waited until Tariq had found a firm footing on the riverbank. Two other boys reached for the rope as well, and when Gabe called, "Now," They pulled as he lifted the paddle that had held him still. The boat swayed, and the water sloshed around his lower body. Gradually, it moved to shore. When he looked up as the bottom of the boat scraped against the rocks at the shallow edge, he saw Jonas there as well, looking concerned. "It needs work," he muttered as he climbed out. He tied one end of the rope to the boat, threading it through a gap between some boards near the top. He took the other end from Tariq and looked around for a tree trunk to tie it to.
"Boys," he heard Jonas say, "it's time to start getting ready for supper. You go on. I'll stay here with Gabe. Thanks for your help."
Gabe knotted the rope around the slender trunk of a nearby sapling and glanced back at the small, leaky failure of a boat that he had been so proud of a short time before. It was smeared with mud, and the torn rag was dangling from the gap he had stuffed it into. Jonas was waiting for him, standing silently, his expression sympathetic.
"I don't know why I'm tying it up. I should just let it float out there and sink."
Gabe's voice was shaking with tears very near the surface. He wiped his wet, dirt-smeared hands on his dripping shorts and climbed the bank to face the man who was the closest thing he had to a father.
"I'm sorry," Jonas said.
"It's not even a real boat. It's just a bunch of boards tied together, that's all it is."
He wiped his face with one dirty hand and looked angrily at Jonas, defying him to disagree.
"It floated, though," he added.
"Yes, it did float.
And my paddle really worked well."
All that work, the weeks and weeks of planning, of building, of hoping, and all he could say now was that the paddle worked well.
Gabe felt it all slipping away, his dream of returning, of finding his mother, of becoming part of something he had yearned for all his life. He had envisioned a triumphant return to the place where his life had begun. He had daydreamed about being recognized and greeted.
"Look, it's Gabriel."
In his imagination, he had seen his mother running, her arms outstretched to enfold him as he stepped smiling from his sturdy little vessel. The river still surged past. It moved and churned, foaming and dark, carrying leaves and sand and twigs from one place to the next.
What a fool he had been, to think that it could have carried him as well.
Angrily, he kicked at the boat, then turned away. "Come with me, Gabe. You can come back to my house and get cleaned up there. Kira will give us some supper and we can talk. There's something important I need to tell you." Gabe scowled at his ruined boat one more time, then grudgingly, he climbed the slippery bank. Carrying his paddle, he followed Jonas to the path that led back to the village. Chapter 8.
"Do you remember Trademark, Gabe?"
"Yes, sort of. Though they didn't let children go, you had to be older than 12.
"Thank goodness for that," Jonas said.
Gabe reached toward the plate and took another cookie. Kira was a wonderful cook. The cookies she had served for dessert were crisp and studded with dried fruits and nuts. He hadn't been counting, really, but he thought this was his sixth.
Gabe and Jonas were seated together on the pillow-strewn couch. Gabe had had a bath, and Jonas had provided him with clean clothes. He was glad he hadn't had to go back to Boys' Lodge after the boat disaster. The other boys would have made jokes about it. They probably would for weeks to come. But at least for now, this first evening, he wouldn't have to listen and try to smile. Kira was tucking the children into bed. Gabe had watched her with them earlier as she fed them their supper and wiped their smeared, sleepy faces, talking softly to them about the nice day they had had, about a picnic, and the flowers they had picked. In a small earthen pot on the table, the bouquet of yellow loosestrife, purple coneflowers, and lacy ferns cast a shadow against the wall in the dimming light. Gabe had little interest in babies. He would rather talk to Frolic, the old overweight dog asleep on the floor, than to Matthew and Annabelle, with their grabby hands and screechy giggles. He was relieved when Kira finally took them off to bed. It amused him that Jonas kissed their sweaty little necks and called night-night affectionately as they toddled off with their mother. But still, he felt an enormous sadness that he didn't entirely understand,
when he watched Kira with her children. He felt a loss, a hole in his own life. Had anyone, all right, any woman, ever murmured to him that way, or brushed crumbs gently from his cheek? Had anyone ever mothered him? Jonas had told him no. A manufactured product, Jonas had said, describing his origin sadly. But he thought he remembered something else. A dim blur, that's all, but it was there. Someone had held him, had whispered to him. Someone had loved him once. He was sure of it. He was sure he could find it, could find her. If only the stupid boat.
Try to stay awake, Gabe. I know it's been a long day, but I want to talk to you.
He had been drifting off. Gabe shook himself fully awake and took another sip from his cup of tea.
About Trademart? He asked. I barely remember it. Just listening to people talk about it. It was creepy in some way, but kind of exciting. We always wanted to sneak in, me and the other boys.
It had been going on for years, Jonas described. I never paid much attention to it until I became leader. Then I began to see that...
He paused when Kira came into the room, carrying a cup of tea. She sat down in a nearby chair.
I'm telling Gabe about Trademart.
Kira nodded. I wasn't here then, she told Gabe, but Jonas has described it to me.
She made a face and shivered slightly.
Scary.
Gabe didn't say anything. He wondered why they were talking about an event that had ended years before. It had always seemed to me like a simple entertainment, Jonas said. Everyone got dressed up. There was a lot of merriment to the preparations. But as I got older, I began to sense that there was always a nervousness to it, an uneasiness. So when I became leader, I began going to watch.
Gabe yawned. So what happened exactly? He asked politely.
It was a kind of ritualized thing. Every now and then, this man appeared in the village. He always wore strange clothes and talked in an odd, convoluted way. He was called Trademaster. He got up on the stage and called people forward one by one. Then he invited them to make trades.
Trades? Gabe asked. Meaning what?
Well, people would tell him what they most wanted. They'd say it loudly, everyone could hear. And then, they told him what they were willing to trade for it. But they whispered that part.
Gabe looked puzzled. Give me an example, he said.
Suppose it was your turn. You would go to the stage and tell Trademaster what you wanted most. What might you ask for?
Gabe hesitated. He couldn't put it into words, really, the thing he truly wanted. Finally, he shrugged.
A good boat, I guess. And then you would whisper to him what you were willing to trade away in order to get it.
Gabe made a face. I don't have anything.
Most people think that. And they thought that then. But they found otherwise. He suggested to them that they trade parts of themselves.
Gabe sat up straighter, more awake, intrigued now.
Like a finger or something, or an ear? There's a woman here in the village who only has one ear. The other got chopped off before she came here as punishment for something, I think. There are places that do those kinds of horrible punishments.
I know. And I know the woman you mean. You're right. She escaped from a place with a cruel government.
But Trademaster was asking for something different. You had to trade... Let me think how to describe it. Part of your basic character.
Like what?
Well, if you wanted a boat, he'd be able to provide that. But let's think about your character, Gabe. You're, what, energetic, I'd say.
And smart. I do pretty well in school.
Honest. Likeable.
Well, I'm honest, that's true. I'm not always likeable. I'm pretty mean to Simon sometimes.
Jonas chuckled. Well, you're energetic, agreed?
Yes, I'm energetic.
Let's use that, just for example. Suppose Trademaster could give you a really fine boat, Gabe. You'd have to trade for it, though. You'd have to trade your energy. You'd be on the stage,
He'd whisper to you what the trade would consist of. No one would be able to hear, just you. But then he'd say loudly, "Trade," and you'd have to reply. "Easy. A fine boat? I'd say trade." He'd write it down. "And I'd get my boat." You would. I never knew of anyone asking for a boat, so I don't know how it would appear. But he had amazing powers. Probably a fine boat would be waiting for you the next day at the river. Yes. Gabe was wide awake now, fascinated by the thought of how easily he might have obtained a boat. But don't forget, you would have made a trade for it, and your energy would have been taken from you. You might wake up the next morning and be unable to get out of bed. So I'd rest for a day till I felt energetic. Gabe, Trademaster has enormous power. He could take your energy permanently. So I'd be in a wheelchair or something for the rest of my life? Could be. All right, that wouldn't work. I wouldn't trade my energy. But what would your other choices be? Gabe thought. Honesty? Smartness? I could maybe trade one of those. Think about it. Well, I could trade my honesty. Then I'd be a dishonest person, but I'd have a really good boat. He shrugged. That might work. Jonas laughed. Anyway, he said, that's what Trademark was all about. It began to corrupt the people of the village. They traded away the best parts of themselves the way you would have in order to get the foolish things they thought they wanted or needed. A boat isn't foolish, Gabe argued. He yawned. Jonas got up and went to where the tea kettle was simmering. He made himself another cup of tea. Kira, tea? He asked, but she shook her head. Take my word for it, Gabe, he said when he sat back down. Trademaster was taking control of this village, and he was pure evil. It became clear when Maddie died. That was the end of Trademart. Gabe saw that Kira had put her hands to her face. She had been very close to Maddie. They were all silent for a moment. Outside it had begun to rain. They could hear it against the roof. Then Jonas said, I want to talk to you, Gabe, about powers. Powers? Gabe suddenly felt uneasy. They were entering a realm that they hadn't approached before. Maybe a better word is gifts. I have a certain power, or gift. It became apparent when I was young, 12 or so. I was able to focus on something and will myself to see. He sighed and looked at Kira. I don't know how to describe this to him, he said. Kira tried. Jonas can see beyond, Gabe. He can see to another place, but he has to work very hard at it. It depletes him. And the power is ebbing, Jonas added. I can feel that it's leaving me. Kira is experiencing the same thing.
You mean she has a gift too? Mine's different. Mine has always been through my hands, Kira explained. I realized it the way Jonas did when I was young. My hands began to be able to do things, to make things that an ordinary pair of hands can't. But now, she smiled, it's leaving me as well, and that's all right. I think Jonas and I don't need these gifts anymore. We've used them to create our life here. We've helped others, and our time of such powers is passing now. But we've talked about you, Gabe. We feel certain that you have some kind of gift.
I felt it when you were very young, Gabe, Jonas said, when I took you and escaped the place where we were. I've been waiting for it to make itself known to you.
He looked at Gabe as if something might become apparent at that moment. Gabe shifted uncomfortably on the couch.
Well, he said finally, it's not a gift for boat building, is it?
Jonas chuckled. No, he said, but you're very determined. That serves you well, and I think you're going to need that determination and your energy. In fact, all your attributes, plus whatever special gift you haven't discovered yet.
I have discovered it, Gabe thought. I can veer. But he stayed silent. He simply didn't feel ready to tell them.
Because you have a hard job ahead of you, Jonas continued.
What do you mean? I'm going to use the last of my own power, Jonas said. I'm going to see beyond one final time.
Why? Asked Kira, startled.
Gabe echoed her.
Why?
I have to find out where Trademaster is, Jonas told them both. He's still out there somewhere. He's quite near. And he's terribly dangerous. The rain had become louder, drenching, and a wind had risen. Tree branches whipped against the side of the house. Kira rose suddenly from her chair and pulled a window closed. Jonas paid no attention. And Gabe, he said. When I find him. Gabe waited. He was wide awake now. It's going to be up to you then. You must destroy him.
Me? Why me? He's nothing to do with me.
Jonas took a deep breath. It's everything to do with you, Gabe. But it's a very long story. I was going to tell it to you tonight, but I can see how tired you are, and it's late. Let's get some sleep now, and in the morning, I'll explain it to you. Chapter 9. The leaves dripped onto the wet grass, but the rain had stopped, and the pale sun had risen. It was late morning now, and Gabe was just waking. He had slept fitfully on the couch until finally, nudged awake by the household noises, he yawned and opened his eyes. He watched Kira tending the children. In her soft voice, she spoke firmly to Matthew, who was trying to grab a toy from his sister. Annabelle held it tightly in her fist and looked defiantly at her brother.
No,
she said. Kira laughed. When she saw that Gabe was awake, she turned away from the little ones. How are you feeling? She asked. You slept a long time. Gabe nodded. He looked around the room.
I'm all right. I had strange dreams. I'm sorry I slept so late. You should have woken me. Is Jonas here?
No, he had to leave.
But he promised to explain.
I know, and he will, but he got an urgent message early this morning. Someone in the village is quite sick.
Why did they call for him? He's not a healer. They usually call herbalist.
Kira shrugged.
I'm not sure. Apparently she asked for him. Are you hungry? The children just had some bread and jam. Would you like some?
Gabe went to the table. She poured milk into a thick cup for him. He drank some and spread raspberry jam on the crusty, freshly baked bread. He watched when she turned her attention again to the toddlers.
Do you think they'll remember this moment when they're older? He asked suddenly.
Fighting over a toy? Eating bread and jam? Probably not. They're too little for specific memories like that. But I think they'll remember the general feeling of being taken care of being scolded now and then, maybe of being held and hugged.
She poured more milk into his empty cup.
Why?
I don't know. I just wondered.
I think I remember being very small and sleeping beside my mother. When I think of it, I feel her warmth, and I think maybe she sang to me. I suppose I was just about the age of Annabelle.
Kira smiled.
I didn't walk when I was her age. It took me a long time to walk because of my leg. One of her legs was twisted. It was why she leaned on a stick when she walked. He glanced at her, at the stick, when she spoke of it, but his mind was not on that.
I don't have a single memory like that.
What do you remember, Gabe? Kira asked him.
I rode in a seat on the back of a bike. You know that bicycle in the museum?
Of course.
I remember that a little. But it was Jonas who brought me here on that bike. He wasn't my parent. I don't remember a mother the way you do, the way Annabelle and Matthew will.
Except, he paused.
Except what?
Gabe squirmed on his chair.
There was a woman. I know there was. And she loved me.
Kira smiled.
Of course she did. Kira, I mean, I really know. Last night, when you and Jonas were talking about your gifts?
She looked at him.
Yes? I didn't want to tell you. I don't know why. Maybe I just needed to test it one more time.
Test what? Kira glanced toward the children who were now playing quietly. She came to the table and sat down in the chair next to Gabe.
My gift. I do have one. I call it Veering. Go on.
At first it just happened. It always surprised me. But then I found I could choose the time, I could direct it. I could cause it to happen.
Was it that way for you?
Kira nodded. Yes, it was.
And this morning, just a few minutes ago, you were over there with the children?
Gabe nodded toward the corner of the room where the two little ones were industriously piling blocks into towers.
I was lying on the couch, half awake, watching, and I decided to veer into Matthew.
Into Matthew? Kira looked puzzled.
Yes, because he's the boy. I suppose it's not that different with a girl, but I needed to know how it felt to be a small boy looking at his mother.
They both glanced over at Matthew. His tongue was wedged between his lips and he was frowning with concentration as he balanced a blue wooden triangle on top of a pile of square red blocks.
So I concentrated really hard. The first thing that happens is a silence. You were talking to the children, showing them how the blocks fit together, and just as you said, see the shapes? You were holding up a yellow one, and...
Yes, Annabelle took it from me, Kira said.
Maybe, I don't remember that, because the silence happened. I never notice what's happening when the silence comes. But then I...
I veered into Matthew. I entered Matthew.
You never moved from the couch.
No, my body doesn't move, but my awareness shifts.
Kira nodded. And then, Gabe went on, I became part of Matthew's feelings at that moment. I felt them. I understood them.
So your gift is understanding how someone feels?
More than understanding it, feeling it. And this morning when I did that, I felt my own little self, my baby self, experiencing what Matthew was experiencing at that moment. He was receiving so much love from his mother.
Kira, beginning to understand, nodded. For Matthew, that was coming from me. But for you, Gabe, you were remembering.
Yes, I don't know her name or where she is now, but I know for certain who she was.
The two of them sat silently, watching the children play. Later, after he had helped her clean up the lunch dishes, Kira said, I'm going to take the children for a walk. Want to come? She lifted two small jackets from a hook on the wall.
When's Jonas coming back?
I don't know. I'm surprised that he's been gone so long.
Is it all right if I wait here for him?
Of course, you and he have a lot to talk about.
Gabe looked through the window down at the winding paths that crisscrossed the village. People hurried along, busy with midday tasks. Beyond the orchard, he could see the library. It appeared closed. Nearby, in the playing field, children were running around with a ball that they passed back and forth. He could hear their shouts. It was an ordinary day in the quiet, well-ordered place. Yet someplace in the village, someone was very ill, and Jonas was there.
I think I'll go look for him, Gabe said suddenly. Do you know where he went? Who is it who is so sick?
Kira reached into a small sleeve and guided Annabelle's chubby arm through. Other side now, she said to the little girl, and held open the other sleeve.
Can you do yours by yourself?
She asked Matthew, whose jacket was on the floor in front of him. He grinned and shook his head no.
A woman named Claire, she said to Gabe, in answer to his question. I'm sure you've seen her in the village. She's very, very old.
Oh, her. Yes, I've seen her often.
Well, I fear you won't be seeing her much longer. It sounds as if her time is running out.
With both children now buttoned into their jackets, Kira headed to the door with Annabelle in her arms and Matthew by one hand.
Can you open the door for me? Is it all right if I leave my paddle here?
He looked toward the corner where it was propped against the wall. The sunlight made it gleam golden.
Of course, I won't let the children play with it.
Gabe helped her through the door and down the front steps.
Do you know where she lives, or is she in the infirmary?
Jonas went to her house. It's over there someplace. Kira indicated, nodding her head, a place beyond the library, beyond the schoolhouse. He could see the small cottages deep in shade that dotted the wooded area. Gabe thanked her quickly for the place to eat and sleep after such a bad day.
Then as Kira headed with the children to the play area nearby, he began to jog toward the place where Claire lived and where Jonas was with her now. He wanted to talk more about what Jonas had proposed last night. It had been on his mind since he had awakened. He was to kill someone named Trademaster? It made no sense. Jonas was a peaceful, compassionate man. All right, maybe this Trademaster guy was bad, maybe even pure evil, but he wasn't bothering anyone they knew. They would watch out for him, would fend him off if he showed signs of trying to return to the village and do harm. Huh, Gabe thought with a wry smile. Maybe they should just put him into my stupid boat and give it a firm shove into the river. The little cottage was deep in a thicket of trees, but he had no trouble finding the place where Claire lived. Several aged women stood somberly outside, murmuring to one another. So sudden, he overheard one woman say to another. Came upon her just like that. She was fine last night. Happens that way, a tall white-haired woman said knowingly, and several others nodded. Gabe excused himself politely as he passed them. Is Jonas inside? He asked. A woman nodded. She asked for him first thing. Strange, she murmured. Is it all right if I go in? Gabe asked. No one seemed to be in charge. They all looked at him blankly, and he took it as permission. The door stood partially open, and he entered after a quiet knock on the wood, which drew no reply. The interior was very dim. It was bright outside on this clear day after the night's rain, but the windows of the cottage were small, and woven curtains were drawn across. He smelled stale food, old age, dried herbs, and dust. Herbalist, who ordinarily tended the sick, sat quietly in a rocking chair. Gabe looked around. Jonas?
Over here.
He followed the voice and found Jonas sitting in the shadows beside the bed. Again he wondered, why? Why had the old woman asked for Jonas? And how soon could Jonas excuse himself and come away? Gabe needed to talk to him. Their conversation last night had seemed urgent. More than urgent, it had been alarming. Jonas, the most peaceful of souls, seemed to be commanding Gabe to commit murder. He had not explained, not really. He had said they would discuss it more fully in the morning. Now morning had passed, and Gabe wanted to know more. The old woman was dying, as old people always do. It was the natural way of things. Her friends were nearby, an herbalist was sitting in the corner. She didn't need Jonas, not as much as Gabe did.
Can't you leave? Gabe whispered, moving closer. We need to talk. You promised to explain.
Shh.
Jonas held up a hand. Now through the dim light, he could see Jonas more clearly, and the woman in the bed as well. Her eyes were open, and it was clear that she had seen Gabe approaching. Her thin fingers moved, plucking at the blanket. Jonas was watching her very closely. Now he leaned forward as if to listen. Her thin, dry lips were moving. Gabe could not hear at first what she said, but Jonas did. Jonas was nodding. Gabe stood there uncertainly. The woman's mouth began to move again, and he found himself leaning forward to listen. This time, nearer, he could hear her words.
Tell him,
she was saying to Jonas. Chapter 10.
I'm sorry. I just don't believe you.
Gabe's voice was both skeptical and firm. Jonas leaned forward, his elbows on his knees. He cupped his own face with his hands. They were sitting together on the bench behind the library, the same bench where he had so recently sat with Claire. He looked up and sighed.
I felt the same way yesterday, when she told it to me. I sat here thinking, this woman is crazy. Is that what you're thinking now of me, Gabe?
Gabe shook his head and looked away. He wanted to be someplace else, off with his lodge mates,